everyone, and welcome to episode number 143 of Book Hype. This week, we're finally going to be doing our Roar book review, which we're all very excited about. As usual, if you'd like to follow us, you can hit us up on Twitter at Book Hype, on Facebook.com/HypeableBooks, and on Goodreads at HypeableBooks. And of course, you can follow any of our book coverage on Hypeable.com. My name is Karen, and I'm joined today by Brittany and Kristen, the usual crew. How are you guys doing?
All right.
I know how Kristen's doing. Kristen's excited.
I'm excited. There's also, I just got some bad Big Brother news, too, so that's going to be, I found out I know who won HOH just a few seconds ago, and it's going to make a rough week, but that's not book-related, and book-related-wise, I'm very excited.
Yes, that is very true. Well, I've spent all of my time reading Roar. Too much time reading Roar. Not too much. It just took me a long time because I was really enjoying it, going through it nice and slow and reveling in all of the words. So I don't have anything to share this week for what I've been reading. But as usual, Kristen, you've got a good list going here.
Yeah, I kind of sank back into my audiobook obsession at work. So this week I managed to listen to three, although one of them I ended up coming home and reading and finishing because I couldn't wait till the next day to go back and listen to the rest of it. But I actually read A Beautiful Mistake by V. Keeland. It's her newest book. I kind of stumbled across one of hers earlier this year just because the premise of the book sounded really great. It was Egomaniac. I talked about it back in like January. And so I kind of like, I really liked her style and like what she did with that book. So I was like, I want to see if it's the same or, you know, if it was just kind of a one-off that really stuck out to me. Well, I absolutely loved Beautiful Mistake. It was a really, really interesting, like, like college professor and TA kind of book, but there's a whole lot more to it than that, and it was a really, really beautiful story. So highly recommend that one if you're looking for just a standalone one-off book. I then listened to Playboy Pilot and Stuck Up Suit, both of which are co-written by V. Keeland and Penelope Ward. They write together a lot, and both of those audiobooks were really great. And again, both are basically one-offs. They don't really connect at all. But they kind of have a little series going, so all the covers kind of look the same. So I thought they would overlap a little bit, and they didn't really. But both of those were really fun. The Playboy Pilot one was kind of funny because they were traveling, like, they had met in an airport and she was like basically trying to choose a destination. She was kind of well off, so she didn't need to worry about the money and was just at the airport trying to figure out where she was going. And this guy walks up and she doesn't realize he's a pilot and, you know, basically convinces her to come on the flight he's going to be flying. And she doesn't realize he's a pilot until she's on the plane and she hears his voice come over the loudspeaker. And like all of that was, it was just fun, different than what I normally read. So that was good fun. And Stuck Up Suit is like one of my favorites. It's like enemies to lovers, like enemies not have no interest in each other. In fact, the book starts with her basically screaming at this guy, and to see where the story went from there was just really, really fun. So highly recommend those. And last but not least, I read my first Corina Hale book, or Holly. I don't know how she pronounces her name. I actually met her at a PolyCon, and she was really lovely, and I know she's one of Sonia's favorites. So I was getting a couple of picture frames signed, one for me and one for Sonia, just so that, you know, just something fun to have. And so I made sure to visit her because I knew she was one of Sonia's faves. And she was really lovely, and I keep meaning to read her books, like I had never gotten around to it. So I finally got my hands on one of the audiobooks, and this was the one that I just couldn't wait and came home and read because I had already bought the ebook part a while back. And so I read, you know, the second half of it. And it was really, really great. Just a really beautiful story about a girl whose sister was married to this guy. And her, this is not giving anything away because you find it out in like the first chapter. Her sister dies. And so she has, you know, these ties to this other guy. And there's a reason why everything like just doesn't feel finished between them. And it's actually set in Hawaii. So you get a whole set of like all of the Hawaiian customs and all of that too. It was just really, really wonderful. And it was exactly what I needed at the time. So I highly recommend that book. And I'm currently making my way down the Karina Haley list. So you'll probably hear about a couple of other titles from me in the near future.
Very cool. Once again, wishing that I could do my job and listen to audiobooks at the same time, because I would get so much more done.
It really is the only way that I would be reading like 5 books a week. There's too much, like there's too much to do that I wouldn't have time. So it is really nice to be able to kind of double up my time there.
Yep. Wish I could. What about you, Brittany?
So it is crunch time at work. So it's the time of the month where I work in publishing. And right now we have 27 August and September books either backed up or getting ready to go to the printer. So I've been reading a lot of medical magazines over the past 2 weeks. But in addition to that, I did make some time to actually read a real book, and I read The Ready-Made Thief by Augustus Rose, and I talked about it a little bit on the last episode of Book Hype about how I was really excited to read it because I had it sitting there, and I had an interview with Augustus Rose, and it was awesome, and it's about this girl named Lee, and she goes on these like urban adventures. So like she like, it starts off in like an abandoned aquarium, and she you know, is a victim of the system where she, you know, is covering for someone and ends up in juvie, but then finds her way out. And she sort of just lives in this like underground life with a couple of other key players in this story. But it all comes to a head when she, steals something, and it's from this secret society. And there's this station master like character in the book who is like constantly watching over her. And the opening of the book, the like prologue opens with her finding a note inside the aquarium that says like, return what you took. And it's a Duchamp painting picture. And so there's like the society of these like people who are just obsessed with Marcel Duchamp. And like, it's really awesome to read the book and then go and look at this artist's work and just like hidden symbols in it. And it like leads to all these different events in her life. And like these people are after her, and just these people are obsessed with it. And it's so well researched, and it sort of has like a Dan Brown vibe to it, you know, where, and I mentioned this in the interview, which will be on Hypeable tomorrow, actually. Tomorrow meaning Friday, August 4th. So you'll be listening to this after that. You can read it and check it out. It's like this book just seems like such a dystopian world, but it's completely set in reality. So it's sort of like that, you know, like I was saying, like Dan Brown vibe, where like you could go to all of those places in like, you know, Rome and Paris, and they're all there, and you can look for all these things and connect all the dots yourself, but it's just everything's hidden in plain sight. So it was really good and a fun read. Recommend it if you have a weekend at the beach or something. It's really good. But other than that, it's all about cancer in my life. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Although that book does sound like it was basically made for me. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to have to add that to my list.
I will. How about I just send it to you?
You can absolutely do that. That works for me too. Awesome. Well, we are going to continue our new section, which is Deal of the Day, where Kristen reads out some of the Amazon deals that you can get right now. And again, please help us keep an eye on these. Last time we did it, it worked out pretty well. And I think the deals did last a few days after we announced them. So we really just want to give you guys an opportunity to get some books cheaper and maybe read some things that you wouldn't usually read. That's always fun to do. So, Kristen, take it away.
Okay, so this first one is the one I'm not entirely sure about, but the second one I'm positive you will all get a chance to get at the reduced price. The first one is Bittersweet by Serena Bowen. I've talked about this book before, I know I have, because I really love the True North series. When Sonia started covering all of Serena Bowen's books, this was the one series I was like, I'm claiming that one. You can write about everything else, you know, you can review everything else she does, but I really want to review any of her True North books she might write, because I read the first three and fell in love with the characters. Like, the first book is about Griff and Audrey, a girl that he met once or twice in his past or something, and it's been a while since I've read the book, but I do remember absolutely loving it. He's a former college football player who goes back home to run his family's farm and orchard, and he really takes pride in his alcoholic cider. And so Bittersweet is basically like Griff's story, Griff and Audrey. But it's such a wonderful, like, it paints such a really vivid picture of Vermont and like the whole orchard / farming, you know, life. And it's just really, really awesome. So definitely check that one out. It's 99 cents right now. I don't know how long it will be, so I hope you guys can get a chance at that one, but even if you don't, definitely check that out at your library or something, because it's really great. The second one is Shattered Blue by Lauren Bird Horowitz. This book came out, I think it was 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years ago, like in September or something. And it's really, really great. It's a little more YA than romance, so for those that don't tend to lean to the YA or the romance side of things, this book is really interesting because it takes on like the fairy fae world in a different way than I've seen it done before. This is based on like colors of fae, and like I don't read a lot of paranormal and like fantasy stuff. I read some, but not a lot. But this just struck me differently. It was really, really fun when I read it, and I reviewed it. The review is in the backlogs on Hypeable. It's about 2 years ago now, so you know. You click back quite a bit, you can find it, or search for it. I'm pretty sure you can find it that way. But it's only $1 on Amazon, and it should be all month. This was listed in the Kindle monthly deals. So if you haven't checked that one out, I highly recommend it. I really, really liked that story.
Very neat. I remember when that one came through and you read it and we were talking about it. I haven't read it yet either, but it sounded really good. Like, yeah, something that would be on my plate. And speaking of romance and YA, that kind of ties into our discussion of Roar and our Book Bites discussion for this week as well, because if you've been listening for any length of time, you know that Cora Carmack is a romance writer, and she has ventured into YA, which she's not the first person to do this. She's not the only. A lot of people do that, but there's a lot of interesting topic around doing that sort of thing, and jumping from any genre or category can be interesting. A lot of authors sometimes stick to the same thing. You know, you look at Rick Riordan, he writes a lot of children's books. He has a couple of older adult books, but his bread and butter is children's books. It's what people expect from him. It's what he's good at. So he kind of just keeps writing them, which some authors do, but a lot of other authors like to explore their options. And again, there's a really interesting discussion kind of surrounding the jump from romance to YA, and in particular with Roar in mind. So Kristen, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on the topic.
Yeah, this has been really present in my brain lately, because a lot of my favorite romance writers have taken on YA recently. Kylie Scott just wrote Trust, which I know I talked about last week. Samantha Young took on The Impossible Vastness of Us. Christina Lauren has a book coming out in September that Sonia read and has written her review for, and she just fell in love with, called Autobiography. Like, it's really present that romance authors know that not everyone wants to read romance, or people think it has this, like, it has this stigma with it that people can't get past. But if they, you know, discover a YA story that they really like and then want to read more of that author, it's a way to bridge the gap. So romance to YA is a really common, popular bridge to cross these days, especially. And when Karen was reading Roar, she mentioned to me that Cora's romance experience kind of shines through, because, you know, it's a fantasy world that she's setting up in Roar, but the interpersonal stuff is there. Like, you can read it, you know, it's there the entire time. So because of that, it made me think about, does romance writers' experience help or hurt them when they're trying to write YA? Like, do you think that that is a benefit, or is it like a stigma? Is it something they're going to have to get past?
I think this is so interesting because, yeah, when you're reading Roar, the story, the like YA element of the story is absolutely fantastic. So I don't think it hurts in any way, but you can tell the way that she writes the scenes between some of the characters, particularly Roar and Locke, you can tell she kind of has a heavy hand in the romance world. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily know that she was a romance writer first if you didn't know that already, but she puts a big emphasis on that. I like it because I like to read romance, but I could see why that would maybe be off-putting to some people who aren't as interested in romance plot lines. But for the most part, I don't really see it as like a hindrance. I don't know. What did you think about it, Brittany?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a hindrance, except maybe in regards to how quickly or mature characters are. I know we read, and this has been this, I've brought this up probably several times. One of my biggest gripes is like when reading YA is like, you know, the old soul trapped in the 18-year-old body, like they're wiser than their years. And I think where a romance writer could find a pitfall is making them romantically wiser than their years. So if you're a romance writer who deals with, let's say, like between 25 and 30 year olds, like coming into YA, it might be hard to make them more emotionally immature. I don't know. And like write about like first love as opposed to like, oh, I've been scorned before. Like, you know, I don't read a lot of romance except the ones that Kristen like keeps really highly recommending. And then I get really into it. And most of them have been set in college level, like, you know, either first or second loves. And, you know, you get that, you kind of get a little bit of a YA vibe, even if it's more of just like a new adult or young, I guess. Yeah. New adult fiction. But yeah, I don't think it would be a hindrance, except maybe depending on what age you're used to writing for. That would be the only place where I would see it, like maybe having to think about relationships in a new way and write these characters differently, because there's a lot more, I feel like there's a lot more going on in YA, like life-wise. Like, sure, someone's job could suck, but it's not like, I don't know, I feel like it's more earth shattering, for instance, literally in Roar, earth shattering, but like, you know, the problems seem more heightened in YA because it's like the first time for everything. It's the first college class. It's the first time away from home. It's the first time you're trying something new. It's the first time, not even just college related or, you know, leaving high school related, but like these dystopian places, like, you know, literally you're going to die and then you're dealing with the emotional aspects. Whereas like you have a crappy job or you're working in theater or your hockey team isn't making the finals. They aren't as heavy as moving into dystopian YA, we're all going to die unless I save the world. And also that boy is really cute and has good hair. You know, there's like a lot, there's a lot more piled onto it, but I don't think that it's a shortcoming at all. I think it's just a working the muscle in a different way.
Yeah, I totally agree that like getting the younger, like younger look at romance and love and whatever their story may be, because it may not even be a younger YA romance, like, but getting that angle of it right, making them less mature, less sure, less knowledgeable of what they should be doing, like that could definitely be like a pitfall of crossing from romance to YA. Like that totally makes sense to me. The other thing, I mean, that you kind of have to think about is like reader preconception, which is hard to step away from. Like if you really like writing romance, it's probably gonna seep into your YA. Like it's probably not gonna, you know, be a Dan Brown story with no romantic interest, although even those have some. So, you know, like, can readers get past the fact that you've written romance? Or maybe, you know, like, you pulled the Aaron Watt move and, like, create a pen name or something so that people don't necessarily know that you have a past in romance. Like, maybe that would help. Be interesting.
Again, I think that really applies to anything, because somebody who's written, you know, contemporary YA, even fantasy their entire life, all of a sudden jumping into horror. I mean, look at Stephanie Perkins. Look at the books that she's written, and now she's coming up with There's Someone Inside Your House, which is a horror novel. Even I'm like, and this is actually a question I have for you, Kristen. Were you at all worried that you wouldn't like Cora Carmack's YA work? Because even though I'm pretty sure I'm going to like this book by Stephanie Perkins because I do like horror, I did like her other books a lot, and I liked her style and the way she came at it. It doesn't necessarily mean she can write a good horror book.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, I was excited to hear what Roar was going to be about, and I heard about it like a year and a half before it came out. So I've had a long time to like sit on it and think about it. And I was a little worried that it wouldn't necessarily, you know, live up to all of the romance from her that I love, because I have not read a book by her that I haven't really loved. And so, yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking. But once I had my hands on it and like started diving in, it was, you know, nerves settled and I was fine, and I just read the book and loved it. So yeah, I definitely had some nerves about it. I was dedicated enough that it didn't matter. I was going to read it anyway, but I know that I was definitely unnerved by the change. And last but not least, do you think that the romance experience could help the YA characters to feel more fully fledged in like a fantasy world? Like, especially with Roar, she had to build this whole world for us and, you know, flesh it out enough that we knew the rules. And because of that, do you think that her experience with the romance angle helped to make the characters fully fledged while still building all of that? Because sometimes character work can kind of fall by the wayside when you've got a lot of world building to do.
I think that's totally fair, because a lot of romance novels are character driven and they're about people's feelings. And when you write dystopian novels, a lot of that is about plot. A lot of that is about the action and kind of keeping the story going to make it interesting. And so I feel like her job as a romance author did help her make these characters feel so real to me. And I mean, that's the mark of a good author anyway. It doesn't necessarily have to come from that side of it. But because she builds those characters in her other books so well, and she really makes you feel what they're feeling, I feel like that really did translate well over to Roar.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I didn't want to get too much into discussion because I have like a very specific thing I want to say, but just generally, I think that the characters in Roar, you just knew them the moment you met them. And I think that came through very, I was amazed by how well that came through while also getting a sense of where we were in like all the different locales. Like as soon as Roar leaves, you know, and she meets Locke, like you instantly felt that you were in that world. But I also felt that I was getting properly introduced to all the characters and how they existed in that place. Like, you know, and like you feel different when you're with Cassius, and you feel the setting as much as you feel the characters. And I think that really has to do with, like Karen was saying, like really just knowing your characters inside and out because of the writing background that you have, in particular in romance, because you do have to know. You can take any of the characters and interchange, I would say, pretty much anything. Like you could take a college campus and make it anywhere in the world. You can put any sport in there, but it's the characters that you want to read about. Like, I don't care who won the hockey. I don't even think there was that much hockey in that off-campus series that we read. Like, I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm going to go practice. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, great. Like, I don't care. Where's the party? You know what I mean? So, yeah, the world building in those aside from like the set locales of the dorm or the coffee shop, or like, you know, they can be interchangeable. But here, I think that it's the characters that really came through, and you get that from other authors' writing in the romance genre, especially. It's the characters that you want to read more of. You don't care where they go.
Very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know Kristen's probably squirming in her seat right now. So let's get into our general Roar discussion. I'm really excited about this because I have a lot of stuff to say, and it's really good stuff. So I'm going to hand this over to Kristen. It will be in your capable hands. I know you've been wanting to discuss this for ages, so let's get right to it.
I mean, I'm just happy that I don't have to hold back anymore, because I really didn't want to spoil it, because as you know now, there's some twists to exactly what's happening. And if you give them away, it's like, wait, no. And it almost happened the other night, Karen, when you told me the storm made her go crazy. Now you know what I meant. Yes. When I was like, oh, because that kind of happens twice. And I forgot that the first one happened so early, and mm-hmm. I didn't realize you weren't that far, so I kind of panicked and was like, I hope I said nothing that is going
you
to
didn't
happen. And so yeah I feel better now.
And earlier today I was like, I have a theory, do you want to hear it or not? And she was like, yes, hang on. And she picks up a pillow and holds it in front of her face. She's like, I don't want to give anything away. Okay, tell me.
Yeah. Like, I just didn't want to accidentally, like, react to it and give away the fact that, nope, you're hella wrong. Or, yep, you got it right on the nose. Like, I
didn't even look at you either. I was like, just don't look at her. And then that way you won't accidentally be spoiled, just in case.
I can adjust my face before you actually, like,
yes.
But anyway, that was good fun. All right, so let's jump on in. I basically just want to have a discussion, so if you guys have something that you want to bring up, feel free, because I just want to talk about this book. But I came up with a whole bunch of questions so that if we have issues, we can just kind of, you know, use it as a guide. First off, as we always do, buy or borrow? Let's go with Karen. What do you think?
Buy. Absolutely. I was really impressed with this, mostly because it's such a unique book, but the writing is really good too. The characters, I fell in love with so many of them. If you like any sort of fantasy novel, I think this is really right up anybody's alley. I think it's just a really cool concept. So definitely buy.
And Brittany?
Yeah, well, I'm going to also say bye, which, as you know, coming from me, who is a person who cannot physically read another freaking dystopian novel, is a huge recommendation. So,
Brittany, she was so worried. She's like, I think she hates it. She hasn't said anything. I think she hates it.
Like, I've been so worried. It's been a nerve-wracking couple of days.
I really did like it. I read the opening page, and when I first got it, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. I walked away from it, and I'm like, nope, I'm just going to sit down and read this in, like, you know, a time where it's just me and it's just this book. And then I can get everything else out of my head instead of like, why am I reading this when I need to be doing X, Y, and Z? So I did that. And I am grateful for doing that, because I wasn't rushed or flustered or anything. And I did really enjoy it. So I would say bye.
Yay. Okay. Well, I'm definitely a buy. I already own a copy, as well as the ARC. And I just bought the ebook and the audiobook the other day because I can't help myself.
Do you now have it in all possible forms?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, unless she comes out with a soft cover, like I bought the hardcover version on sale for the pre-order. So unless there's a soft cover coming out, because I don't think there is one yet, you know, that would be the only version I wouldn't currently own. Because the ARC is a little different. Anyway. But yeah, so clearly I'm a buy. I would have told you to buy this before it came out, because it was just, you know, I trust her. I trust her so much. And after seeing her kind of tackle high fantasy, which is, if you know anything about Cora, she loves to read high fantasy. She's read a ton of them and is always looking for new recommendations. So if any of you love high fantasy, find Cora on Twitter and be like, you're going to love this series, because she is always looking for new ones. And so knowing she had read a lot of it, I knew she understood like what it takes to write fantasy. Like, she's read it so much, she knows what's at stake. And it was just a matter of like, how is writing it going to be different than enjoying reading it for her? So I was really, really glad that this is as great as it is, because, you know, just makes my life that much more awesome. All right. So let's start off with, what did you think of the concept of like the storm magic and the storm hunting and, you know, this whole world and like how the weather is more like sentient? What did you feel about that? Like, how did you take that, especially in the introductions in the first couple of chapters or whatever? Go ahead, Brittany.
I was glad that it wasn't all given away at once. Like, you didn't have to sit through a bunch of, you know, background and exposition, like, you know, this is the way it was in olden time. Like, you know, like, you're not getting a history lesson, but instead, like, you are thrown in and there are all these like stone things, and then you slowly find out what they mean. And then you find out that it's not just people who are gifted with magic, that you can hunt storms, you can take the heart of storms. And then there are all these people who are just like storm hunters, and they sell magic, and they're not inherently born with gifts. And, you know, but it's slow. Like, you get to a quarter of the way in the book, and you still haven't hunted or know really what the true nature of these storms are. Cause during the first one, like, Roar's not feeling well, you know, and there's, you know, she's off with her mother and Cassius takes care of it. You're still like on the outskirts, so you're not immediately thrown into this. But the whole time I'm like, okay, but I want to go and see what the heart of the storm is. I want to see what's happening. It really did a great job of building it and just like then finding, like, I kept referring to them in my head as like the Twister gang. Like, you know, I was expecting them to hop on like the pickup truck, and like they're all like jamming out to like some, yes, like, driving through a cornfield. But yeah, I got it. Like, I thought it was awesome, and I liked that it wasn't all given away at once, because I think it was well earned throughout the book, because it made you want to keep reading. So it was really cool.
And Karen, any thoughts?
Yeah, I loved the concept of sentient storms. I think that's so unique. I was trying to think of something that was even remotely close to it, and I was like, Hercules, like Disney's Hercules, technically you have like the big hurricane guy who comes through and like, you know, the different forces of nature that destroys towns and stuff. But like, this is so unique that I think it's really interesting. And because the market is flooded with YA fantasy and dystopian novels, they can bleed together sometimes. But this one really stands out to me. And kind of what you were talking about too, Brittany, with the pacing, I thought I was going to have trouble with it at first, because this book, I will say, tried my patience, not in a bad way, but in a way that like I wanted to know the answers so badly. I was like, I am 200 pages into this book. Why do I not know what Rora can do yet? Like, I was so mad about it because it was driving me insane. But because there was such great character work in between all those action moments, like, I know you guys like a lot of character driven stuff, and I'm the one that's sort of like, just give me the explosions. It was a little hard for me, or I thought it was going to be a little hard for me, but the characters were so alive that I just kind of reveled in reading about them and what they were doing and their backgrounds and all of that. So that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first heard that this was like what she was going to be doing, I was like intrigued, because storms, you know, tornadoes and that have always been a thing in my childhood that I was like terrified of. So it's always kind of, they've also kind of fascinated me as I've gotten older, like just learning what causes storms and, you know, what they are. And then to hear that she was going to take that to like a fantasy world level, and I was like, that's definitely cool. So yeah, I was really intrigued by that, and seeing how it kind of came alive in the story. And as you said, Brittany, like a little bit at a time. It wasn't like, you need to know exactly how all of this works, here's everything you need to know, now we're going to get to the characters. Like, getting to know Aurora before, you know, ever really meeting a storm or worrying about the storm magic part of it was really nice. So then you slowly but surely learned more about why these storms act the way they are and like what exactly is going on. So yeah, I definitely found it really, really interesting too. We kind of already addressed this, but is there anything else that this book did exceptionally well that you were really like impressed by? Do either of you have anything that stands out?
Yeah, well, this is what I wanted to talk about during the book bites, but I wanted to get like more specific with it. And I think it was, we were talking about how, you know, bringing a romance writer into YA and just having that great character work. I think the switching between whose point of view you were reading was really done well, because it wasn't something I was expecting at all. I was like, okay, I'm here, I'm with Aurora, here we go, like this is the book. And then it switched and I was like, oh, okay, cool, I'm here now. And but it kept moving, but it moved so fluidly that I was never jarred or like, oh, I want, so like this happens, I think I've talked about this on here before, but when I was reading the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants books, I would just flip ahead to read the character that I wanted to. Like, I didn't really care what was happening with some of the other characters. Like, I really never cared about, like, what's her name? Amber Tamblyn. Whoever Amber Tamblyn plays in the movie.
Okay.
Really didn't care about her character at all. And so, in the later books. So, I mean, like, in this, though, I was always like, oh, no, wait. Oh, no, it's okay. I want to be here. I was never jarred by, like, I don't want to be in this person's head at any moment. So I thought that was done exceptionally well, that the characters were so well built out that it didn't matter who you were reading from the perspective of, it just worked.
For me, it was really just the world building, because I can get lost in details. And I know I've talked about this before with high fantasy, like high fantasy is not really my thing, because I just want to get to the action. And when you have 3 pages of what kind of food's on the dinner table, like, my eyes start to glaze over. And as interesting as it is to me to be able to envision a book so clearly, like, I just want to get to the stuff that does stuff. I want things to happen. And she did a really good job of balancing it, because you do learn a lot about the storms, but you kind of learn about the history of everything either as it goes on, because that's the great thing about Aurora too, is like she knows stuff, but she doesn't know everything. She learns that pretty early on. So as she learns things, we learn things. And that's a good way to kind of parse out that information. And even the little bits in between where you get like the little sections from the history books and stuff like that, that gives you kind of a feel for what this world is like. And even silly little things like the lullaby kind of tells you a lot about people and about how they view the world. And I think she just did a really good job of not making it overwhelming.
Awesome. I definitely agree. One of the things that kind of stood out to me is very similar to yours, Britt, is that it kept moving. And because you're switching between viewpoints, and you're doing it so often, that sometimes when I read books like that, I kind of get pulled out a little bit, because I'm constantly wishing I could go and be with these two characters because they're the two I really love and I want to know what's going on. And that is definitely something that Game of Thrones suffers from for me. I was never with the characters I wanted to be with long enough. And so that's why I kind of fell off of those in around the third or fourth book. Like, I just couldn't handle reading characters that I didn't connect with for chapter on chapter on chapter sometimes. But here, I do agree, like, she did a really great job of hopping between characters, but doing it at a point where you were anxious to get more from those characters, but you also left them at a point where, you know, you're not worried, or like if you're worried, it's for a purpose. Like, she did a really great job of cutting between them at the right time and kind of giving you a chance to let a scene between Locke and Aurora settle while you're dealing with Cassius and Nova. And you know, she'll leave Nova, you know, about to burst into flames because she just can't handle it, and then, you know, suddenly you're with the, you know, unnamed Storm Lord, and you're like, what is happening? So yeah, I really liked the pacing. I really liked how she used the different viewpoints and like exactly what that brought to the book, because again, very much like you, Britt, when I opened it, I wasn't expecting other points of view. I was expecting Rora for the whole thing. And so as soon as you start getting, you know, other people, I was like, okay, all right, I can dig it. All right, let's see how this goes. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, but a good one. So yeah. Is there anything that you found the book lacked, that it wasn't necessarily its strongest point? Because, you know, no book is perfect and they all have things.
I don't know that it lacked anything, but one thing I was surprised by, okay, one thing that I think might not sit well for everybody about this book is that this book is not a complete story. You get some answers, but there's a pretty big cliffhanger when you leave off, and it's definitely meant to like hook right on into the second book. And I know some people kind of like, even when they know it's a trilogy, they like the complete story with like a clue of what's coming next. This book feels very unfinished to me, not in a bad way, like I said, but in a way that's like, all right, where's the second book? I need to read it right now. And even though that sits well with me, like I understand that's not going to sit well for everybody.
Yeah, definitely fair. I definitely agree. That would definitely, like, I wasn't even thinking like that. I think because this is the first time in a while where I'm like, okay, I'm ready for the next book. Like, I'm actually excited to go and read the next book, because we do tend to read a lot of book ones on here, and there's not really, you know, a real big desire for me to go beyond most of the series. But here I was just like, okay, like I'm like by halfway through the book, I'm like, all right, I'm in it for however much she's willing to give me. But I was surprised, because I read it on my Kindle, how quickly the percentage counter was going up. And I'm like, I'm definitely running out of room for there to be answers in the next 2% of this book. So yeah, I definitely agree that I think that's a problem with reading on the Kindle. I need to like turn off the tracker when I read, because I'm like, I'm getting close to the end, and I'm definitely not going to get everything I need out of this. So there was a little bit of that hesitation, but it definitely didn't make me enjoy the book any less.
I could definitely see that maybe alienating romance readers, because they are well known for their happily ever afters, or at least happy for nows, because there are series in the romance world where two characters have 5 books. Like, it does exist. But usually you leave the book on a happy note, and then the next book picks up and causes another problem or something. So yeah, I could definitely see some romance readers being a little upset about how this book ends. But, you know, we do have some answers by the end of the book, just not all of them. So it's not a terrible place to end, but it also leaves you wanting the next one, because I definitely was feeling the same way you guys were. Like, I'm ready for the next book, and I know she's writing it, or at least when this book came out, she was already working on book 2, and it will likely come out next year in June, around the same time that Roar did. So it's coming. She's working on it, and hopefully I'll have my arc in March again, and that way I don't have to wait as long. But yeah, so I can definitely see that as a bit of a not necessarily something it's lacking or shortcoming, but something that might not sit perfectly well with everybody. And last but not least, for like the general questions, did you have like a favorite scene? Is there one bit of the story that just really jumped out at you that you loved the most?
Oh, I do. Definitely. My favorite scene is when she's talking with the Skyfire boy. Was that Skyfire?
Yes.
That was so cool. And it's when you really kind of figure out what's going on with her. I mean, before that, I was starting to figure it out. And especially once we were introduced to the Storm Lord, you're like, wait a second. But like, maybe there are some parallels here. But then when this whole scene went down, and just the fact that she could communicate with it, and you realize that the storms they're just souls, and some souls are bad and some are good, and some are just restless and confused and they don't know what to do. And, you know, he just wanted to play, and but he plays with lightning, so it's dangerous. And the way that she took the heart as well, and, you know, Locke kind of waking up to see her do that and then not knowing what the hell is going on was just really pivotal for the story, but like so vibrant in my mind. I could just see like every detail of it still.
Karen picked a really good scene.
Okay, yeah, she did.
But remember when Aurora left and Locke followed her and then they kissed and it started raining? Like, that was a scene that happened.
That was a good scene.
Karen's like, this awesome, like, full thing that made the whole story come together. And me like, okay, but then they kiss. So we need to talk about that.
Listen, if there's a good, like, emotional crying kiss scene, I'm totally on board. And so, like, that whole, like, I think that was, like, the thunderstorm or the rainstorm or whatever that, like, really just made her sob. Like, for some reason, that scene got me, too. So I know what you mean.
But I was like, ah, oh, I should have gone first.
It's all right.
Sorry.
She's just an overachiever. And is
I got excited. All scenes are equal. They're all great.
I honestly, like, I love the scene that Karen talked about. And I just said how much I love the scene Brittany was talking about. But I love the first time that the storm overwhelms her. And she's, like, angry and is, like, hitting things and just is, like, knock me out. Like, seeing her experience the emotions of the storm and figuring out, like, she's never been close enough to one to have to deal with that. Like, she has never fought a storm. Her mother always did it, or her brother. And so she's never had to be close enough to experience it. She's always been down in the storm shelters or whatever. So knowing that this is her first real chance to be near one, and all of a sudden, like, she's upset and she's angry and she's hitting people and, like, they had to knock her out. Like, that whole scene was just really intense and was the first time that you realize that there's something going on with her that's not just powerless. Like, she's not the you know, the missing link in the Pavan chain of magical, you know, storm lords. Like, she has some ability in her. We just don't know what it is yet. So, yeah, that was definitely one of my faves, too. Okay, so let's get into a few of these characters. I mean, we've talked a little bit about them, but, you know, there's quite a few in there, and there's some that we love and some that we may not love so much. So let's start with favorites. Did anyone have, like, a specific favorite character that they're like, this is the one, I don't care, you know, Roar is cool or this person is cool, but I love this character?
Oh, man, that's so hard. The weird thing is, like, I like them all for so many different reasons, but I think Jinx really stands out to me because she's just a spitfire and she's so cool and she's got her earth magic. And I like her attitude. You know, she's a badass. And I also really like that she takes to Roar, you know, whereas Sly is very hesitant about her and doesn't trust her. Jinx is just like, let's go shopping. You need new clothes. And I think that was really cool.
Yeah, I did. I also enjoyed Jinx and her, like, spunky, you know, we're just going to do this because it's the logical thing to do. And we're going to take our minds off of things. And, you know, she was just, like, a refreshing character to bring into those, like, you know, when a situation would get a little, like Karen was saying, a little too dire, she was like, all right, let's just go get you some new boots or something. You know, it's like the perfect amount of levity without being overwhelmingly annoying, you know, because sometimes characters like that can get out of hand.
We like get some more information about her and Ransom, please? Because, like, I need that.
Yeah. I mean, there's more books. I'm hoping that gets its own moment in the sun, because I completely agree.
But I think one of my favorite characters, I mean, besides Roar and the, you know, Locke, of course, because I just talked about him, I think with Nova, I think she was really an interesting character, because when you're first introduced to her, you're sort of like, oh, she's just here for one scene. Like, it's totally fine. But then her story gets so complex and just, you know, like you were saying earlier, Kristen, like she's about to like burst into flames and it just cuts away. And you're like, oh, but that poor, I don't know. Like, I found it hard to place how I felt about her every time I was reading. And so I think that that's why she really just sticks out as a character for me as I was reading this book. I was like, let's get back to her for a little bit because I want to know what's going on.
Yeah. And she's such a loyal friend, mm-hmm. despite the fact that she hasn't really been around Aurora for a number of years because she was, you know, pulled, because Roar was pulled away by her mom and all that. Like, she's still so loyal to her. And it just, yeah. Nova is, she's one of the ones that I'm interested to see more from, because we got to know her and we got a lot of her story, but there's still so much so many question marks just like hanging in the air for her that I definitely want to see more of. For me, one of my favorites is Duke. I love Roar and I love Locke, and you know, how can you not love Jinx? But I really love Duke, and there's something about the way that he is. I know that he's got secrets that he hasn't told, and those secrets are going, I feel like they're going to play a huge role in the later books. Like, I think he has a connection to other lands that we've kind of gotten hints at, but we're not necessarily supposed to have made the connection yet. I don't know. But, like, reading his scenes with Roar and, like, seeing him interact with everyone and, like, how he's described and how his, like, I believe his tattoos are described and, like, stuff like that, it just made me question that there's more to him than just the de facto leader, older guy. Like, every, you know, clan of roving storm hunters needs, like, an elder, someone who knows more than everyone else. And so you expect that character, but I really think that there's more to him than meets the eye.
Do you want to know my theory?
What's your theory?
I think he was on the boat with What's-His-Face when they went over to look for new lands.
I think so too.
Because he was in the Navy or yeah. whatever, like the equivalent of that. And he's obviously led a long and haggard life. He's quiet. He doesn't share a whole lot about himself, but he's very kind and obviously very worldly. And we learned specifically that that boat sailed when Aurora was born. So it was like 18 years ago. He's definitely old enough to have been a part of that. And I think that's, I mean, and plus his knowledge of the book without knowing the book necessarily kind of makes me think he had like firsthand experience.
Yeah. I definitely think he's got some ties to that. If he wasn't directly on the boat, he had a brother or something, or he read a firsthand account, or I don't know. There's something going on there, and I really think he was on the boat. Yeah. I'm really intrigued by Duke, and I just really appreciated what he brought to the group and all of that. So he's one of my faves. I'm excited to see more from him. I included least favorite, and we can like talk about this, but if nobody really has a least favorite, that's fine too.
I would say my least favorite is probably the queen, just because we don't know much about her. She's kind of an empty character for me. Although I did find her reaction to Aurora going missing very interesting, because she's very cold in the beginning of the book, but obviously cares about her daughter because it's her daughter. So she's not like evil or devoid of any empathy or anything, but she's a calculated queen who has grown cold because this is the best way to protect the kingdom. And the fact that she falls apart when her daughter goes missing tells you how much she loves her. But she doesn't have a huge influence on the story. She's kind of there to build up this uncertainty in Aurora in the beginning of the book. And then that's basically it. So if I had to pick a least favorite one, or one that like doesn't really mean anything to me, it would be her.
Fair. Definitely fair. Yeah, Does anybody stick out to you, Britt?
I agree with that. mainly because she's just the one we know the least about, but the details that Karen pointed out, the fact that she does care about her daughter, even if, like, you know, there's that scene in the beginning where she is with Roar, but when the storm is happening and she's like, oh, after the storm happens and Cassius takes care of it, she's just like, oh, you know, he, like, you're in Aurora's head hearing her say, like, oh, well, of course she's talking about someone else being able to handle it. So, like, you get that impression that the queen is, like, she's doing her best, but this is what she has had to deal with, and Aurora feels like a disappointment to her. But I don't think that the queen, like, yes, this is a letdown, but it's not the be all end all of her life. She's finding a way to work around it and still keep her daughter in her life. Like, I want to say that I don't really like Cassius, but
no,
but I think it's a good dislike at this moment. You know what I mean? It's not like a, oh my God, I can't read another page with him on it. It's more of like a, I don't know where to place my feelings about you, sir. So I'm going to err on the side of step back and squint at you from a distance.
That's probably the safe choice. Kristen was witness to my roller coaster ride when it came to Cassius, because I was like giving her live updates as I was reading. And when we first meet him, you're like, okay, yeah, he's an ass, whatever. You know, he's not meant to be very likable because he's the one coming into her life and disrupting everything, and he doesn't know that she could ever care for him, let alone love him. And then you kind of get into his head and you're like, wait, like, yes, he's not a great person, but he's not evil, and he's not as terrible as his father. He is looking out for himself, but he has feelings for Aurora, and those feelings are real, and he's pushing back against them because he knows how dangerous it can be to have feelings for someone, in the same way that Locke felt that in the beginning as well. I was like, oh, so he's like, you know, very cold, hard exterior, but like he's kind of gooey on the inside. I like guys like that. This is going to be great. And then we're introduced to Locke, and I was like, no, no, but I like Locke too, but I hate love triangles. What's going to happen? And Cassius kind of falls to the wayside while she's with Locke. And I think Locke is meant to be like her person for the story. I'm still so interested in Cassius and what he's going to bring to the table, because he cares about her. And I don't think that's going to go away, but I have a feeling that perhaps his sense of duty is going to override that, and he's going to make a decision later on. I mean, this is me projecting. Hopefully, like, he doesn't turn out to be evil and he doesn't go down a dark path. I'm hoping that he kind of chooses to be a good leader, even if that means like he has to look for a different queen, or if that means he has to let Aurora be with somebody else. You know, kind of, he's very territorial, so he's got to give up chasing after her, which I think is going to be really hard for him, but I hope he does it, because now I love Locke, even though I'm oh, it's so hard.
Yeah, Cassius definitely fits for me under the next category that I was going to ask about. So I mean, I could take a second and talk about him, because I could probably talk for days about Cassius. When Cora originally started the story, he wasn't supposed to be as complicated a guy as we got. Like, she originally envisioned him as like the antagonist, like the one to kind of push Roar out, and who knows where the story was going from there. But like, originally she had started off with him being an ass, and that was basically going to be what he was, and he kept poking at her like there was more to him, and she kept feeling like there's more to Cassius than just the jerk who's here to steal her kingdom and, like, you know, be a part of the family plan. And so I'm really, really intrigued by Cassius. I want to see what he's going to do to stand up to his family, because clearly he doesn't agree with how they're doing business. And there's a lot of layers to him. I'm with you, Karen, where I don't hate love triangles, but I don't always love them either, because I find them kind of predictable. There's usually a side where you just kind of feel like that's where it's going, and it's hard to always balance it. But I don't necessarily feel like this is going to be a true triangle, because while Nova has kept her power a top, you know, she's kept it under wraps and has done really well to try and hide the fact that she has magic. I really feel like the second Cassius learns that she has magic other than storm magic, that she's going to become an ally for him and that he's not going to keep her locked in the tower like he has. Like, right now, he doesn't know that she can help him in other ways. And we saw in the marketplace that just because old magics are technically illegal doesn't mean that he's not interested in using them or in learning more about them. So I really hope that Nova and him, like, figure out what they mean to each other and that something maybe happens for them, not and leave Aurora to Locke, because clearly, come on. So yeah, I'm intrigued to find out more about the Nova and Cassius dynamic, and I hope that that kind of goes the way I want it to.
That's interesting, and that's something that I really considered, even though they were thrown together so much.
Yeah, I can get behind that, though. And, I mean, this is kind of jumping ahead a little bit, because your next question is, which peripheral character do you hope that we learn more about in book two? Mine's definitely Nova, because I wasn't expecting to get inside her head at all. I kind of thought she was going to be a fleeting character who set Aurora on this path and then kind of just disappeared from the story. Turns out, like, she's got a lot more going on there, and I love that she has this fire magic. And I'm very interested in learning more about her. I'm very interested in her loyalty to the queen, because she's one of the bigger servants. She talks about how her family is kind of respected, and so the other servants kind of defer to her. She's gained that respect herself. So it's clear that if Aurora trusts her, and that the queen probably trusts her to an extent anyway, that there could be some sort of, you know, bond there. And I want to see her kind of get rid of her anxiety, get rid of her insecurities, and just become this badass who has this control over the fire. And I just want to see her take down the king and just really become a fully fledged character.
Yeah, I'd like a little novella, you know, if we can't work it into a
podcast. That would be cool. A novella?
Oh. Doing Cora's work coming. For her.
I knew that was coming. I think for me, the peripheral character that definitely stands to be fleshed out the most for me is Sly. We got a dose of her in this book, and we know she's the skeptic, and, you know, now that we know why Roar was lying, and, you know, she knows why Roar was lying. She still isn't, like, ready to, and, you know, open her arms and just be like, come and join the family. Like, there's a lot going on with Sly, and I'm definitely interested in seeing, you know, what she brings to the group and how her and Aurora can kind of bond, and, like, and how that could happen. Like, what events could maybe pull them together rather than keeping them separate. And yeah, there's a lot to learn about Sly that I'm interested in seeing.
I think you brought this up earlier, Kristen, and it just made me think after reading this question, is I would like to know more about Duke and his past, because, and I think that that's coming. Well, I hope that that's coming, but that's definitely a character that I would like to know more about and really bring to the forefront of maybe the next book, if not his own little story, because I'd like to know more about where he's from, and because he is wise beyond his, like, you know, beyond the group. He's that person that they all kind of like look at, you know, so I'd like to know more about his past and how he got to where he is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, he's just intriguing and mysterious and just kind of looming. Duke, love Duke. I don't really know what to talk about when it comes to, like, the families, like Locke and the Pavan family and the Locke family. Like, there's not really a lot to talk about, but I wasn't sure if there was anything that, like, stuck out that you wanted to maybe talk about. Like, the whole reveal that the Locke family, like, city, the town was completely destroyed, and that's why they're in Pavan. Like, that whole thing just kind of shocked me. I didn't think twice about the whole family being there. It's a wedding, you know? And as everyone else sort of got confused and surprised by the fact that the entire Locke family was there, I was like, uh-oh, like, that's not normal. Okay. So yeah, I the family dynamics are, we haven't really gotten a ton of it because clearly Roar left and the families were left behind. But is there anything about like that whole aspect of the story that you guys found particularly interesting or anything like that?
All right. This sounds really weird, it sounds weird in my head to me. So bear with me here. So for some reason, when I was reading this book, I kept picturing the opening scene of The Swan Princess, where like the families are traveling back and forth because the kids are friends, and then they eventually like want them to get married. And so I just kept thinking, I'm like, oh, this is clearly what that family is doing. Like, they're bringing the whole family over to spend the summer at one place, and then, you know, they'll go back when it's not, you know. Like, it just made me think of that the whole time. I'm like, oh, that clearly makes sense in my head as to why this is happening. But when that wasn't the reason, and we find out that the Locke family is actually there for a different reason, I was like, oh, like, this is something, A, I didn't expect, but B, totally explains this arrangement almost, to where like, oh, we're not going to ask any questions about the daughter. We're just totally fine marrying our son off. Like, you know, yes, welcome us into your town. And it's totally fine. It just made their families make more sense. And it showed that, I think that this is something that kind of disappears a lot in YA, especially dystopian stuff, is the adults disappear. And here, yes, they're still around, and like we were saying, we don't really have much on the queen, but we do feel that she is, like, she does love her daughter, and we get that very paternal, like, you know, I'm going to find a way to make this work because she is my kid, that sort of thing. I think we get, at least on the outskirts of the descriptions of the families, we get that little bit of, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make my family thrive and survive, and you get that aggression from the king a bit in the beginning with Cassius, but you know, it's just, there's that tension of like, okay, I have no home. This is why this has to work. And you know, there's that, like, I guess because I'm older now, I don't know. It's just my birthday. I'm feeling very old. I'm like relating more to like the adult characters where I'm like, okay, they're just trying to make it work for their families. And so I think that I'm hoping that the families are a little bit more fleshed out in the coming books, because I think that that's something that can tend to get lost or muddled in YA series. So I'm hoping that we do get to talk about them more going forward.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more about them, just because we don't know much other than Cassius. And even Cassius, we don't know that well, but we've gotten a much bigger peek inside his brain than the other characters. The king, I was telling Kristen, I keep relating it back because Cassius keeps calling him mad, like the Mad King from Game of Thrones. And I just think of this guy as being totally unhinged, and really, you never know what he's going to do, because clearly he's not thinking straight. Like, Cassius is trying to save Aurora, but he's also thinking ahead about how to take over this kingdom in the way that works best for the family. And yeah, Aurora too, but like, he's being a little selfish as well. Mm-hmm. And the Mad King is just like, let's throw up our flags now and hang anybody who doesn't like it. And he doesn't have his head on straight. And then Casimir, we don't really know anything about, but I feel like he's even more dangerous because he's looking for his father's approval. And who the hell knows what he's willing to do to get it? So all of that wrapped up is just, it's going to be an interesting kind of butting of the heads when Aurora does return home. And I'm so interested in seeing how the manipulations play out.
Yeah, there's a lot left to learn about them. And I feel like returning back to Pavan and having to share space with the Locke family and eventually with Queen Aphra again, I'm sure, I think we'll get a better chance to see what exactly the dynamic is going, you know, within the families and like exactly what they can do. Like once Queen Aphra is not mourning Roar, because, you know, I would assume with them returning to the city at the end of the book that pretty soon Aurora's going to have to, you know, go see mom. That once she's no longer mourning, that hopefully she will, you know, become the fierce woman that I'm pretty sure she is. Like, when you meet her at the beginning of the story, she seems kind of cold, but I never really credited that with her being a cold person. It was just like she knew what her daughter was giving up and what her daughter was sacrificing for her city, for her people. And like, I think her mother almost felt like she needed the emotional distance from it or something. Like I never thought Aphra was actually cold. She's just, you know, she was separating herself from that moment because she didn't want Roar to have to do this, but she had to. And yeah, so I'm hoping that this next story, since we're coming back to Pavan, will include more of the whole family dynamic thing, because there's a lot. There's just a lot there. All right. So getting into some of the twists, we've kind of talked about some of this, but did you see it coming with the whole way that Aurora interacts with storms and her ability to communicate and feel them and, you know, sense the souls around her that have the potential to be storms and they just could easily be plucked out of the air and become what, you know, whatever. Did you see any of that coming? Did like the Stormlord's presence kind of give it away or any of that? Like, how did you feel about that reveal?
I went through a roller coaster with this because I really had no idea what was coming until very close to the end. And at first I thought she was just a late bloomer. I thought she would get out into the field and then they would realize like she's just so incredibly powerful and that it just took a long time for her to figure out how to control those powers. And then turns out that nope, that's certainly not the case. And then I thought she could create the storms herself, not necessarily call them like we know she can do, but actually create them. And that would have been an interesting twist just because like she could essentially fight fire with fire, sometimes literally, but again, not really the case. And then the Stormlord shows up and I don't want to say he necessarily gave it away, because at this point in the book, the way that she's been interacting with them, I'm like, she's feeling what they're feeling. Like the storms are making her act crazy. And it's not just that, you know, there's a storm, she goes crazy. There's a twister, she's angry. There's a rainstorm, she's sad. And I was kind of getting there to begin with. And then the Stormlord pops up and I'm like, okay, this is kind of confirmation. I wonder if this is what it is. And it ended up being that way. So I, at the beginning, like really did not see the book going in this direction. But by the middle, toward maybe three quarters of the way through, it was starting to kind of hint at it, which was cool because sometimes it doesn't take that long for you to get clued in. And I think that Cora Carmack did a really good job of hiding that mystery for a long while, even though it was driving me insane.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely what we were talking about earlier. It's just the great pacing and the slow burn of this book that, yes, it's all, it like, you know, when you finish the book, you're like, oh, it's all there. Like I can go back and I can see this and I can reread it and find the passages where I'm like, oh, I was clearly clued into this like really early on. But then when you build up to it and you're reading it for the first time, and then even you get the Stormlord's confirmation in that moment, you're sort of like, oh, it's all like, it all starts to like make sense and the little sparks start to come together. And so I definitely saw it more so when the thunderstorm thing was happening, we were talking about, because like, you know, you just feel that's when it sort of tips off other people where they're like, did you see the way she reacted to that thunderstorm? Like that's not normal. Like, you know, thunderstorms don't make everybody cry and get really emotional and like feel that level of grief. So yeah, it was that's like, you know, when the red flags were really up, but I thought it was a great reveal. And like Karen said, a frustrating one, because you're sitting there the whole book being like, can this girl do anything really? Like, it has to be something she can do. Otherwise, I'm just going to get to the end of the book. It's going to be like, and she was just actually a plain and simple girl. And I'm like, that's not what I want. I want her to keep it together. Have that awesome right. hair.
Yeah. Yeah. The reveal of that and how she did that with the young boy, like the actual reveal where you see her take the heart and, you know, everything goes haywire and crazy, like that, all of that was just incredible for me. It was not what I expected this story to go to. I didn't, you know, she is the second time I read the book, the souls thing came to light throughout the story, like the fact that these are actual souls that are existing, you know, in the world that become storms, and that's why they have their sentience, like that's why they're so violent, and you know, the fact that they can attack certain places, like it all makes sense. But for some reason reading it the first time, I did not catch on to any of these mentions. Like, you get it in some of those little old text snippets that you get at the beginning of chapters, and like Sly talks about it, and when they go to the one town and she drips blood on the altar and like all of that, and the reaction of the Skyfire from that, like you get these hints that there's something more to the storms than just the fact that this is a high fantasy and the storms can attack. Like, there's more there. And it took me a long time to like accept it. And even after it happened, like I had to like sit for a minute. I remember I was in Florida at a PolyCon when I finished it. I sat there, put the book on the table. I'm sitting in this courtyard and the wind is whipping around me because it was like an enclosed courtyard and all the buildings were causing this like wind. And it just, I'm sitting there like trying to get my mind around it. And it just, it floored me. I was like, this is cool. Like, this is just really cool. So yeah, I'm totally invested in the whole souls and the storm thing. That has me more anxious to get to book two than anything else. So definitely cool. Basically, the last thing I wanted to kind of get into was, are there any like questions that you specifically have at the end of the book that you are really excited to get answered or that you hope get answered? I definitely, the three that I put down here, I wrote within like 20 minutes of finishing the book, and they've been sitting in my Kindle ever since, or in my phone ever since. And every so often I just kind of look at them and I'm like, yeah, I really do want answers.
Yeah. I think your questions, I was reading them and sort of like in my questions are mainly just like, I not even questions, just, I want to know more.
Yeah.
It's, because I think it, again, I keep saying this, but it is really true. I do want to read this again, and thank God I'm going on vacation in a few weeks. So, just getting more about these characters, because I think that the writing is so good that I want to just read anything about these characters, even if it's just in profile form at this point, I'll take it. I just want to know more and build out this world and flesh out this group of people. And especially, like, I know Karen wrote it in all caps, but this Storm Lord person, you know, it's just, I want to know more about everything, and I want to keep going. I just want to keep going. So if she could write faster, that's my question.
Yeah.
Can Cora write a little bit faster?
Please. Listen, I know you've got other books. I get that. But as soon as you can deliver, just, you know, we'll all be waiting.
Yeah, my questions are more character based than anything else. Like, I want to know more about Nova. I want to know more about how she grew up and how she's going to be handling her powers, because I, you know, that's obviously going to come to fruition at one point or another. I want to know more about Duke. We already talked about that. I think he has a long, long backstory that's going to be very relevant to the plot. And yeah, this Storm Lord, who I'm guessing is like a long lost relative or something of the Locke clan, I don't think we get like an actual answer as to who he is, but he's clearly, he had the seal. He was like, you know, touching the seal, and he said it felt so familiar and everything. So I'm guessing he's like royalty maybe. But we don't know anything about why he's doing what he does. But the Locke family clearly knows who he is and how dangerous he is. So that's really interesting to me. And this concept that they're just souls around her in the air is, first of all, really creepy. She was like, if I breathe in too deeply, I might suck one of them in. I'm like, that's disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
But fine. That's fine. And the idea that, you know, the souls just kind of hang out and some of them turn into storms and all of that is just fascinating to me. And sometimes when you read a book like this, you don't necessarily want to delve too deeply into the mechanics of how everything works because it's just too much. Like, you don't need that to understand the story. But here, like, I want to know how everything works. I want to see how everything ticks. And not only just the souls and the actual, like, Stormlings and how they operate, but even Jinx and Nova and their magic and the little baubles you see. Everything to me is just shiny and fresh and new, and I have a lot of questions about everything.
Yeah, and kind of going off of your Nova statement before, I want to know more about, like, her lineage and just if where other characters like her are.
Yeah, because, like, they're not supposed to exist, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, like, just, like, I'm sure that they do exist. You know what I mean? Like, that was just a gut feeling that I have. I'm like, oh, well, there's definitely more. And where are they? And what are they doing? And, you know, is she connected to them? Is she an outsider? Like, what is this history here? So that kind of goes on, like, what I want more of, but also, like, there's just a lot of unanswered questions with her specifically and just the broader scope of what she can do and what the history is, or really is, because she, like you were saying, like, it's not supposed to exist. So
yeah, just like sitting here now thinking about it, I'm like, you know, I think before the series is done, I need like Jinx and Nova standing back to back, like, you combining their magic.
I just
to,
got
like,
goosebumps. No, like, joke.
Like, I need that in my life.
That would
point.
Be so cool.
With everything Jinx can do and everything that Nova, like, has inside of her, you just know, like, she's capable of so much that, yeah, at some point I need them to meet and I need them to, like, figure out how to work together to be, like, unstoppable. That, yeah, just, that would be so cool. Okay, so as I said, I've had these questions, and these are things that just popped in my brain after reading the book. The first one, that these don't necessarily have answers, but is the King of Locke, the man who is now ruling Pavan and who is, you know, the head of the family, is he unknowingly gifting Aurora with the souls to create storms that will take him down? Like, he's killing people in the city. And these people, you know, didn't see it coming. It's not like there are rules they knew they were breaking and suddenly, you know, like, these rules have never been enforced like this. Now, all of a sudden, anyone who shows dissent or whatever is being murdered and hung on the, you know, the city gates at the wall. And, like, I want to know, now that we know that these souls and how they die is kind of a part of the emotion that they emit when Aurora meets them, like, I want to know, like, if these souls that are dying now are going to become the storms that, like, take him down. Like, that just, there's such poetic justice in that, that I, it just, when it occurred to me that that could be the case, it seems like a full circle moment kind of thing that I hope maybe we see. I don't know.
I could absolutely see that happening.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. It's you don't want those deaths to just be him killing people because he's trying to exert his power. Like, you want them to mean more because they are Aurora's people and she is trying to save them. So I think that's more or less why. It's just like, I want them, their sacrifices to mean something, even though I don't know these people. It's just, yeah, I already am like, I'm definitely a citizen of Pavan. Let's do this. Like, take it down. The second one is, more or less like getting into the mechanics of all of this, does the type of soul Aurora uses to create a storm change its intensity or just its character? Like, if it was an older person who passed, are those storms like weaker because when they died, they were more elderly or had weakness? Or like if it's a 20-year-old who was killed, would they be a more intense storm, or like do their personalities come into play? Like, there's a lot that can be used in like creating the right storm to bring down a city or to, you know, fight against the storm lord. Like, I'm really interested to learn more about how storms are created and like all of that.
Rewatchable, I have to deal with how does a person's personality as a human being play with them being a vampire when they lose their soul? Now I got to deal with soul becoming, you know, storms. It's just a lot for me to deal with. These podcasts are killing me with these existential questions.
Right. I think that's an excellent question, though. And yeah. If I had to throw my two cents in there, I would probably say it would matter how they died. Like all the stories you hear about ghosts and stuff, if it's a violent death, if it was a murder or something like that, then they tend to come back stronger, that sort of thing. I would think personality has something to do with it. Just going by the little boy that she was chatting with, you know, he was playful. He was a kid still. He had that innocence, and he kind of threw a temper tantrum like a kid normally would. So I think personality wise, that's definitely something that goes into play there. And I think just their emotions in general, you know, if they have unfinished business, if they have something they want to do, the little boy stuck around to watch his family. And then once they were gone, he kind of faded until he was called again. So I think that there's definitely a lot about, because this is the person's soul, it's their essence, it's their being. So everything that makes them who they are is now concentrated in the middle of this storm, and that's the only way they can express themselves. So yeah, I think all of those kind of things have something to do with it.
Yeah, it's so complicated, and I love it. And yeah, the last thing that I kind of just questioned is we saw her take the heart of a young child, like the storm, the little boy, you know, all that. That was so like violent, and it was, she grieved for that boy, and like it was so intense for her that I also kind of wondered, like, is there a way for her to take a storm heart from a storm that's not going to hurt her? And like, would an older soul like relent their heart, so, you know, because they know she needs it? Or if she's in the presence of a storm and is trying to use the power for good, like, can she tell the storm, like, I need your power, I need it for this, and they relent and give her their heart? Like, is it always as violent as the storm, as the little boy, or it could it be, you know, a more of a peaceful transition? I'm interested to see her like experience the storm hearts and like taking them and seeing how that can be less intense for her.
I think it plays into your previous question, is like, what soul is in the storm?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think intent has a lot to do with it, because I would love to see her go toe to toe with the Storm Lord and with the souls kind of stay on Aurora's side and be like, we'll help you defeat him, kind of thing. Because like, there are good souls, bad souls, violent souls, kind souls, and if the violent and mean ones go with him and all of the good ones go with her, like, that could be really interesting to watch.
Definitely. Definitely. Oh boy. That's going to be interesting. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that I definitely can't wait to see come to fruition. And I know, I was lucky enough throughout the book tour, and like, she didn't really do a tour, but she visited a lot of blogs throughout the release for Roar. And she took questions the one night, and I had a chance to ask her if there were any new characters coming in book two that she was really excited for us to meet. And she told me that there's this like rebel leader, like larger woman living in Pavon that we're going to meet who's like a total badass. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm already on board. So I know she's got a lot cooking for book two, and just with the answers we want and the clear, you know, path that we have to get a few answers from this or that or whatever. There's a lot of good stuff coming.
Do we know what book two is called yet?
No, I have not.
Do you have guesses? I've been thinking about this a lot. I have no idea, but like, it's gotta be another, I feel like it's gotta be another single word, strong sort of, maybe somebody's name. I'm not sure, but like, cause Roar is so good and the cover is so perfect. And now I'm just like really excited to see what the aesthetic is going to be like for book two.
I want to say, like, I don't necessarily want the next book to have a different character's name in the title. Like, Roar fits, because mm-hmm. it is her story, but it's everyone's story, too. But I would love, like, I could see, like, it being, like, Tempest or something Ooh. More storm-related. Like,
yeah. Because I was thinking maybe, like, Thorn, because that would be relevant. Yeah. But I agree that, like, I don't know that I necessarily would want his name to be on the second book. But something like Tempest is really cool.
Yeah. Or, yeah, like something stormy. I don't know. I have no idea. I have not heard anything about the title or if she even has a title or anything like that. But, you know, if I get secrets, I'll lord them over you.
Oh, no.
Just kidding. I would share. I'm too, yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a bit of a wait, but it's a good wait. It's a good, fun wait. And there's plenty of books to keep us occupied until we get the next one. So. Yeah.
Speaking of which, anyone have any ideas for our August book club book?
You're asking too much of us.
Crickets.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I guess we can throw it out to our listeners as well. I was going to go with a book that I'm really looking forward to coming out this month, but I think I want to hold off another month for it so that people have a chance to pick it up and read it. I think it's All Rights Reserved. It's the one that I was talking about before about like having to pay for everything you say, every gesture you make, that kind of thing. I would love to be able to discuss that on the podcast. I think we should hold off because I don't think it comes out until like mid or late August, and I want to give people time to pick it up. But if anybody has a suggestion for an August book, we will discuss that at the end of the month. So please, as usual, you know, at Book Hype on Twitter is probably the best way to get a hold of us. Shoot us your suggestions. We'll be very interested to read them over. Or maybe Brittany can come up with one for August.
I guess.
No pressure.
Let's do the ready-made thief since I already read it.
Ah. Cool. Well, I don't want to cut you off, Kristen, but I know you could also talk about this forever. Was that all of your burning questions and topic discussions?
Yes. For them, okay. I mean, I could probably keep going forever, but I think we hit on all the major stuff. And
yeah,
I feel better. I've now discussed awesome. It.
Yes.
There is peace.
Brittany didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. You can rest easy. I know you've been losing sleep over that. So
hey, it's totally fine. It's intense. It's intense.
It is. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in again. We sincerely hope you loved Roar. And again, if you have any suggestions for our next book club book, please send them our way. Very interested in seeing what you guys want us to discuss. And I don't have a plan yet coming up for the rest of the month, although I will say we do have a couple of author interviews in the works. And I think those are going to be really fun. Not sure when they're going to come out yet, but once we know, we will let you guys know. And until then, just stay tuned. I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.